Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is the Healthy Mind Podcast. Here, we talk about our emotional health and well-being, about living the most authentic life we possibly can, the one we truly deserve. So take notice, our true strength and action are on the march, while our fears and self-doubt are on the run. Never doubt how truly powerful you are. Let's learn together, right here on The Healthy Mind. Ah, yes. Well, welcome, everybody. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Zafiridis. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to The Healthy Mind Podcast. I really do appreciate it. Well, I have a jam-packed program for you today. We're going to be talking about setting limits. Do you have a problem saying no? Oh, yeah, I know that feeling. But we're going to be talking about setting limits, setting boundaries, how we really can do more when we begin to say no, and why sometimes, despite all of our determination, we just keep giving in and we don't set limits. So limit setting today on The Healthy Mind and what you can do to start empowering yourself. In health news, you're going to want to stick around for the second half of the podcast. Wow, some great mind-body news. A protein that was just identified that could be the key to your happiness and may be a brand new way of looking at depression. Wow, a really interesting finding, especially coming off the heels of my interview with Dr. Vladimir Maletek on the biology of depression. We'll also be talking about, oh man, sleep and insomnia. Do you sleep well? Well, you are not going to like what you hear. The latest news on the impact of insomnia on your heart. Oh, man. On your heart. Ugh, you're going to want to hear this. It's pretty important. We'll do some headlines, and hey, what do you know? We've got ourselves a pretty good-looking podcast. So, are you ready? Let's begin. Okay, now, at the start of the show, I asked you, do you have a problem saying no? I know exactly what that's like, but why is it so hard to set limits, to set boundaries, to say, no, I've got enough on my plate? Well, go on a journey with me right now. Imagine that we are on a plane. We're on a plane, and it's pulling out of the gate, and we're going to go to the runway and take off. We're going through the whole routine. We buckle in. We look at the person next to us. Oh, no. Do they look like a chatty patty, or am I going to be able to get my work done? Oh, please, please, please. And the flight attendants, like they typically do, are going through their routine description of the safety information of the airplane. And then they get to this part of the discussion.
To start the flow of oxygen, reach up and pull the mask towards you, fully extending the plastic tubing. Place the mask over your nose and mouth and slip the elastic band over your head. To adjust the fit, pull the tab on each side of the mask. The bag does not need to inflate when oxygen is flowing, and please secure your own mask before assisting others.
The oxygen masks. We've all heard it, right? And especially if you fly a lot, you get to hear that all the time. It's part of the ritual before you take off. But what I really want you to focus on is the very last part of that particular announcement. This part.
Please secure your own mask before assisting others.
Makes sense, right? Makes a lot of sense. You want to put on that oxygen mask because if you're going to try and help somebody, you've got to at least be able to breathe before you can help somebody else, especially if it's a small child, right? Any of us would do it. Makes perfect sense on an airplane. But here's the rub. Why don't we keep that same perspective once we leave the plane? Why don't we keep that perspective for our life in general? Think about that. This comes up quite a bit in my therapy sessions, and also I feel it myself, and I always have to remind myself. Part of being able to be there for all of our obligations, for work, for our relationships, for those we love and care for, is knowing when to set proper limits. Proper limits with our time, our emotional time, our physical time, our obligations. Because just like on that airplane, if we don't put that mask on, we're going to be useless for anybody else. The same thing happens in real life. Part of the obligation that we have, not only to ourselves, but also to those that we love and care for, that mean something in our lives, is knowing when to set those limits and boundaries. To know when to say, hey, I've got enough on my plate. I don't want to be a bad person. I don't want to seem like I'm not a team player. Whatever it may be, I've got to say no. And it's amazing to me, I guess not so much anymore, but it still surprises me when people stop when I say something like this and say, why don't you just say no? And they look at me, wow, what do you mean? I can't. Oh, yeah. Why don't I say no? And I think that that's the most important thing to consider here first, before we talk about some ways to honor yourself and take care of yourself by setting limits, some tips. I ask you the question, why don't you say no? And that's where the psychology of all of this comes in. Now, it's going to vary from person to person, but in general, I think we don't want to be perceived as bad people, particularly if we're individuals that have kind of that goodest personality, that pleasing personality. To say no, it doesn't matter that the person may say, well, okay, I understand he's got a lot on his plate. Peter doesn't want to commit to this. We think, oh gosh, I'll say no. They'll think I'm not a team player. They'll just think I'm lazy or a loser. I'm trying to get out of something. But it doesn't matter. It's not what I want to do, but I just can't say no. It's important here to realize the psychology, the dynamic of what's going on, particularly when we set limits, because we can look online and read all the tips that we want in terms of setting limits, and I encourage you to do that. There's some great, great stuff written out there on setting limits and boundaries, but for that to really sink in, to take effect, first off, we have to understand why it's difficult to put those practices into place, why it's difficult for us to set limits. I ask you to think about this, to think about what does it mean for you to say no? Is it something that you feel comfortable doing? Is it something that you've had a hard time in your life doing because of how you might be perceived, how you might be considered by someone who's important in your life? A boss, a coworker, a spouse, a loved one? Is it really something about how you think someone else will think about you, not how they actually think about you in real life? All right, that was confusing, right? Maybe not, but in case. A lot of times what we worry about in setting limits or telling other people, no, I've had enough, please, I can't take on another thing. We worry about being perceived as not being cooperative or being good or a good person. But I ask you to consider the possibility, the remote possibility, that that person is not even going to be thinking that. They're not. Because I ask you, reverse the role. Say someone comes to you and you ask them to do something, and they very honestly say, you know, Peter, oh man, I'd love to help you. I really, really do. But I am so overstretched. I wish I could help you. And I hope you don't think of me badly, but I've got to say no to this. How on earth can you get mad at that? How can you get mad at that person? Of course you wouldn't get mad at someone. I wouldn't. I might be disappointed because I can't push the work off to somebody else, right? But I really can't feel bad about that person or feel like they're lazy or non-committal. Of course not. But we, when we're on that other side saying no, we give in to our insecurities. We worry about what other people are going to think at the expense of our own emotional and physical health. Very, very common. You're not alone here. But I ask you to consider this because it adds up. It adds up emotionally, and it really adds up physically, especially in a lot of the work and the topics that I've talked about here with regards to psychophysiologic disorders, PPD, or tension myositis syndrome, TMS, the work of John Sarno, Dr. John Sarno. That anger doesn't just go away just because you say, yeah, I'll help out, when you really didn't mean it. Well, that's a notch in there emotionally. And you might not feel the anger right away, but it's going to come out in some point. It may come out as anger. It may come out as sadness or anxiety or insomnia. Or it may come out as physical symptoms, pain and hypertension. We've got to learn to say no. But the first part of learning to say no is understanding why you personally can't say no. And what we find is we are incredibly compassionate people. We care about others and we want to help, but we're not so good affording the same amount of kindness and compassion to ourselves. Now, I'm not saying be a rude person about it or insulting. You're not going to go up to someone and say, no, kiss off. I'm not doing it. Go find somebody else. But if you honestly feel like you are stressed, pushed, where you can't own another project, another duty, another responsibility, and it's hurting you, you really owe it to yourself to take the time to figure out, one, is this a limit I have to set for my own sake? And number two, I need to tell that person that I can't do it. Or I need to be confident in myself that not doing it is the right thing for me. There are a ton of ways to set limits. And really, I'll offer you a few. But really, if you go online, there are so many wonderful websites that are devoted simply to setting limits and boundaries. But really, before you get to that point, it really is important to understand why it is hard for you to say no. Because saying no oftentimes isn't about the other person. Oftentimes, saying no and the difficulty in doing so has everything to do with us. With us. With you. But you're human. Don't doubt your strength. And don't fear the implications when you are at risk of causing emotional or physical harm to yourself to say no. Listen to yourself. Listen to yourself. You know the right thing to do. And if you're really having a problem with it, see someone. Talk to someone. You're not weak. You are not weak. You're so much stronger than you actually can imagine. Now, some helpful tips to consider when we are setting limits. And this is a list that comes from psychologist and coach Dr. Dana Gionta. And I'll have a link to this particular one. I love it. It's on Psych Central. 10 ways to build and preserve boundaries. I'm not going to go through all of them, but I want to just touch on a few that I felt were the most important. Number one, name your limits. You've got to know where you stand with what's good for you and what isn't. Make sure you know what your limits are. Number two, be direct. Be direct in stating your limits and what you can and cannot do. I think that always works because I would appreciate that if someone is telling me that as opposed to kind of dancing around the issue. Be direct in expressing your feelings. Number three, and this is so important, give yourself permission. Don't fall into the cycle of fear and guilt and self-doubt. Oh man, it's so problematic when we get to that point. But if you can give yourself that kindness and compassion, essentially giving yourself permission to say no, you'll really empower yourself. Number four, start small. This is going to take a little bit of time, and I've seen people turn into incredibly empowered and assertive, not rude people, but assertive people when they can state their needs and wants and their limits. But start small. And finally, number five, make your self-care a priority. You've got to allow for you to put yourself first. And again, this isn't being selfish. This comes up so often with folks, particularly, gosh, where I see it the most is of adult children of parents who are getting sick and maybe in a nursing home or an assisted care facility, and the need that they feel to be there every single day and the torment that that causes on that adult child. When they give themselves permission to maybe not go every day, to take a few days off, I have seen amazing, amazing transformations in people's emotions and in their empowerment. And also, this is where it really resonates with people. Being able to say no, to set those limits, allows you to be more present and aware in the relationships that you have. You'll see it. If you start to really consider the reasons why you say no, kind of what is going on there? Why is it hard for me to say no? And then empower yourself with some of these tips. Oh boy, you are going to be surprised at how empowered you become and how happy you become. Because why? You're being kind to yourself. You're being kind to yourself. And just like on that airplane,
please secure your own mask before assisting others.
You would put that mask on. You would do that before helping somebody else. Do that for yourself every single day. Every single day. And that, my friends, will be empowering and a huge step down our road to the healthy mind. And now, it's time for news. Okay, well, another very, very busy week of health news, and especially mind-body health news. Always nice to see the research in that area, and that's where I want to focus, especially coming off of my recent interview with Dr. Vladimir Maletic. Wow, what an incredible mind, really giving us the very latest state-of-the-art information that we have on the biology of depression. If you have a chance, if maybe this is your first time listening to the podcast, or you're going through some of the old podcasts, I really encourage you to listen to the March 6, 2013 episode, The Biology of Depression. One of the best minds out there in neuroscience, Dr. Vlad Maletic. I think you'll really enjoy it. Now, getting to our news. First off, what is it that makes you happy? Think about it. What makes you happy? Is it family? Love? Money? What if I told you all that it took to be happy was a protein? A protein. Oh yeah, a protein. Well, what am I talking about? Well, the headline, is this substance the key to happiness? And for the first time, and these were scientists out of UCLA, they've measured the release of a specific protein, a peptide that they call it. It's a neurotransmitter called hypocretin. Hypocretin that greatly increased when subjects in their study were happy, but it decreased when they were sad. And what the researchers thought was that maybe boosting our hypocretin levels can elevate both our mood and alertness, and maybe laying the foundation for future treatments of depression and other types of abnormalities of mood. Now, in addition to this particular substance, hypocretin, they also measured the release of another protein, a peptide called melanin concentration hormone, or MCH for short. And what these researchers found was that the release of MCH was minimal while we were awake during the waking hours, but it greatly increased during our sleep. And they thought, or believed, that MCH plays a major, major role in making humans sleepy. Now, the senior author of the study at UCLA was a psychiatrist, Dr. Jerome Siegel, and he said, quote, "The current findings explain the sleepiness of narcolepsy as well as the depression that frequently accompanies this disorder. And these findings also suggest that hypocretin deficiency may underlie depression from other causes." End of quotes. Now, Dr. Siegel is no stranger to narcolepsy and depression. In 2000, his team published findings that showed that people suffering from narcolepsy had 95% fewer hypocretin nerve cells, cells that make hypocretin, in the brains than those without narcolepsy. And they were the first team out there that showed a possible biological cause of the disorder of narcolepsy. Now, since depression's associated with narcolepsy, they started to explore the possibility that hypocretin may not be just associated with the depression of narcolepsy. Well, what did they do? Well, in this study, the researchers determined the levels of both hypocretin and that MCH, melanin-concentrating hormone, directly from the brains of several patients who were being treated at that time for very, very difficult-to-treat or intractable epilepsy. They recorded them doing everything when they were watching TV, talking to people like the doctors or their family, while they ate, while they did various types of exercise, and also how they did with sleep and waking up. And they rated their moods accordingly. So what did they find? And it was fascinating. They found that the hypocretin levels were not linked to arousal in general, but they were elevated during the expression of positive emotions, or anger, or social interactions, or on waking up. In contrast, the MCH levels were maximum during sleep onset, and they were barely present during our social interactions. And the implications here are huge. According to Dr. Siegel, what he says is that based on these findings, this could mean a lot as we try to understand depression, not only just associated with narcolepsy, but with depression in general and anxiety. So dovetailing on what Dr. Maletic talked about in my recent podcast on March 6th, it's an umbrella disorder, depression is. So where some people may be affected by serotonin or folic acid or inflammation, some people may possibly be affected by these levels, hypocretin and melanin concentration hormone. Amazing new information and news on hypocretin and MCH as it relates to depression. Okay, now, the next story. But before I go there, let me ask you a question. Do you get a good night's sleep? How well did you sleep last night? Do you feel totally rested? Well, if you're like me, probably not, all right? All of us at some point have suffered with a bout of insomnia. For others, it is very, very serious. Insomnia is a dominant part of their life. And although it can make us feel like a zombie, feel terrible both emotionally and physically, a new possible link has been found to the consequences, the health consequences of insomnia. The headline, Insomniac Nation, poor sleep is linked to heart failure. And according to a new research study in the European Heart Journal, it appears that insomnia is associated with an increased risk of heart failure. Oh, wonderful. Yet another reason why it's important for us to get a good night's sleep. Now, what they found was that the more insomnia symptoms a person experiences, it directly increased their risk. It was a greater risk for heart disease. Now, this wasn't a small research study by any means. This was a team of Norwegian researchers, and they looked at more than 54,000 men and women between the ages of 20 and 89. And they looked at all different types of sleep, difficulty falling asleep, staying asleep, or maybe getting up early and not feeling rested. And they got a bunch of different information in terms of their socioeconomic status, their health status, and what their cardiovascular risk was. And what did they find? They found a pretty clear association between the number of insomnia symptoms and the risk of heart failure. In other words, the people who had more symptoms of insomnia, the greater the risk for heart disease. And this was compared to those individuals that had absolutely no insomnia symptoms. The researchers noted that this study didn't necessarily prove that insomnia was the cause of heart failure. More studies need to be done. And until they actually find that it has a direct causation, insomnia to heart disease, their message was particularly to physicians and other medical health professionals to evaluate the symptoms of insomnia because it might have consequences for cardiovascular problems and possibly cardiovascular prevention. We've talked about sleep a lot here on The Healthy Mind as it relates to mood disorders. I see insomnia as a separate symptom in the treatment. You know, you can give a person the best treatment in the world, whether it's medications or psychotherapy or a combination of both. But if someone's not sleeping, boy, you've got one or both of your hands tied behind your back. So now, more than ever, you've got to get your rest. You've got to sleep. And if this study has anything to say about it, your heart will thank you for it. Okay, with the time that we have left, I just want to blast through the rest of the news in a segment I like to call the Healthy Mind Headlines. Okay, the first headline, and continuing on the theme of heart health, the headline, job burnout can severely compromise heart health. Dr. Sharon Toker of Tel Aviv University has found a link between job burnout and coronary heart disease. She says that her findings were more extreme than she expected and make burnout a stronger predictor for heart disease than many other factors. So you're not sleeping and you're burned out at your job. Oh, man. And speaking of sleep, the next headline. Less sleep leads to more eating and more weight gain. Sleeping just 5 hours a night over a work week and having access to as much food as you want caused participants in a new study led by the University of Colorado Boulder to gain nearly 2 pounds of weight. And finally, oh man, I hope I'm not depressing you too much. Does expressing anger on online rant sites make you feel better or worse? Little is known about the value and emotional consequences of expressing anger on the internet. Rant sites, in theory, provide an outlet for anonymous and angry outbursts. But according to a new study from the University of Wisconsin at Green Bay, it probably doesn't make a whole lot of difference, and it may actually end up hurting you. The study authors say that bursting out with anger really is a maladaptive pattern to stress, and those angry rants online may actually be adding fuel to the fire. Oh, man. Whew. Oh. I guess the theme for this week's news is make sure you like your job, get some sleep, oh man, and keep that anger under control, especially when you're online. Oh dear. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've done it again. Oh yeah, we have reached the end of another broadcast of The Healthy Mind. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. I really do appreciate it. You know, if you are listening to the podcast on iTunes and you like what you hear, if I could just make a special appeal to you, if you like what you hear and you don't mind, take the time to rate the podcast for me. You have no idea what a couple ratings will do to where my podcast is ranked. And I want people to hear this and learn the message of empowerment and health, of what you can do, how strong you are. So if you're listening and you don't mind doing it, even just a couple of five-star ratings makes a tremendous, tremendous difference. So thank you in advance if you happen to do that. A million, million thank yous. The website, as always, www.thehealthymind.com. You can reach me on my email at any time. That's peter@thehealthymind.com. That's peter@thehealthymind.com. And for the Healthy Mind Podcast, part of the Healthy Mind Network, I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis. Have a great week, everybody, and I'll see you next time right here on the Healthy Mind.